Hey everyone, welcome to the first episode of the Baseball Time Machine. The premise of the show is pretty easy. Since it's episode one, I'll set it up. We're going to go back in time 20 years, which is crazy, but 20 years to 1998. And for the rest of the year, we're going to drop a weekly show that highlights what was happening in baseball during that week of the 1998 season. Those topics kind of launch us into larger conversations. So, for example, if Carlos Delgado had a big game in the coming week, we might spend part of the episode talking about Delgado's 98, his career as a whole. So not just limited to that week, but that's going to be a good jumping off point for us. So if you experienced the 98 season, we want you to enjoy the memories with us. If you were new to it, which my guess is some of you are, that maybe this will just be fun for you to learn about what was a crazy season at the time. My co-hosts for this are going to be Alex Crisafulli and Brandon Lee. Guys, how are you and what were you doing in 1998?
I'm doing well. This is Alex. I was finishing up my freshman year of college, I guess. And then what did I do that summer? I think I was a lifeguard or worked construction or something. And then went into my sophomore year.
Hey, this is Brandon. I was... a lifeguard, huh?
Like the whole time, or
that's a good snapshot of 1998.
Okay, all right.
Well, yeah. Well, I was 11, or I had just turned 11 years old in 1998, and this was like the first season where I really, really like fell in love with baseball, and it's interesting because in the trajectory of Chicago sports, which is what I was mostly following, this is like the end of the Bulls dynasty, right? Like, we don't know what's going to happen with Michael Jordan. He's probably retiring. Phil Jackson's definitely gone. And what is going to occupy my time? What am I going to become obsessed with now? And it was the Cubs, because they were having this Cinderella season where everything seemed to go right with a couple of people who ended up being team icons for the next 10 years, and Kerry Wood and Sammy Sosa.
We definitely have a lot of Cubs stuff to hit on, but before we get into the week of July 26, 1998, do you guys have any guess what was the top song in America July 26, 1998?
No.
Your music, guys.
Mm. Not this kind of music. I'm going to say, I feel like that was right before bands like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC started dominating that scene. I think it was before Britney Spears, just before Britney Spears hit too. So I'm going to say it's something like U2 Sweetest Thing or something like that.
I'm going with I actually don't think it's U2, but I'm gonna go with My Name Is by Eminem.
Oh, it was Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls.
Oh,
that
really?
Was hitting this summer. So maybe we'll do this every week.
I love
this.
Can
be our weekly. What was happening? But that was the top song in America.
You know, Dizzy Up the Girl is an all time guilty pleasure album for me. Like I love that. I love that album. And I know, sorry, I just lost 3 Twitter followers by saying that. It is one of my all timers.
I saw that band in high school open up for Bush at Illinois State University.
You are so old.
That is an old sounding sentence. That must have been like boy named Goo days. Like before they went adult contemporary.
Yeah, they were still, I think they had only put out one album that was beyond their initial punk stage, because they were originally a punk band from Buffalo. And I think the story goes, the lead singer was like, you know, I think we could make a lot more money if I just wrote songs that sounded like this. And then he wrote that, was it Name? Was that the name of the song?
Yeah, that was the name.
Yeah, And so I think they had just moved into that stage, but they still had a lot of punk songs to play. I was not expecting to be talking about the Goo Goo Dolls.
There's your Goo Goo Dolls update for 1998. But all right, let's get into some moments. Before we do that, let me just set the stage. Here's where we're at in baseball. the week of July 26, 1998. Most of the divisional series were already decided at this point. We're squarely in Yankees dynasty territory here. They're 15 games up in the East. The Indians are running away with the Central. There was a good AL West battle. The Angels on this week had a half game lead over the Rangers. That would go back and forth a few times. Braves are up 13 and a half games. The Astros and Cubs are kind of deadlocked in this other race in the NL Central. And the Padres had just about put the NL West to bed. So notable events for this week, and we'll see what comes out of this. July 26, Trevor Hoffman's bid to set a major league record with 42 straight saves ended on a homer by Moises Alou in the ninth inning of a game. And so any Trevor Hoffman memories, one of the crazy things to me is I forget this. In 1998, he was going for the record at 42. Do you guys know the current record and how long it is?
Well, it's Gagne, right?
It is. Do you remember how many games this was?
Was it 57?
Okay. Brandon, what's your guess?
62.
He doubled the record with 84 straight games with the save or appearances with the save without blowing one from August 02 to July 04.
I shouldn't sound so surprised. This is a baseball podcast. I'm supposed to be like, oh yeah, but no,
that
I'm like,
seemed
wow.
High to me. Even when I read it, I was like, that's insane. He went that long. But any Trevor Hoffman memories?
Well, he's in the Hall of Fame now as of this weekend.
He is. And this is also our first spark of like, oh yeah, the Padres were good this year. And we're going to have to talk about the Padres a lot.
That's right. Cause they won the pennant.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. So yeah, sorry. Spoiler alert. The Padres won the pennant. That I think it was True Blood who I saw say this the first time, but I've kind of taken it up as a thing that I believe as well. That if I was to fill out a Major League Baseball Sporkle where I'm supposed to name all the teams, the Padres are the one that I would be most likely to forget.
I think that's fair.
They're the most benign franchise, I would say, in maybe all of sports right now. Harmless. Their uniforms are completely bland, which is frustrating because they have a history of some great uniforms, but they've had this white and navy blue combination for a really long time now that I think it doesn't really excite many people.
I think this will probably be a reoccurring game for us repeatedly, but Brandon and Alex, how many members of the 1998 San Diego Padres can you remember?
Should we go back and forth till one of us can't name one anymore?
Perfect, and we're going to keep a running tally the whole season.
Okay. Kevin Brown.
Yes.
Trevor Hoffman.
Yes.
Tony Gwynn.
Yes.
Ryan Klesko. Did I already lose? Did I just lose?
Point, Alex.
Ken Caminiti.
Yes.
I think I'm done.
I think that's it. You would have had go.
Kilvio Varis. Was he on the team?
Oh, you were doing a deep dive on the 1998 Padres. Yes, he was. Starting second baseman.
Why did I go Kilvio? Why didn't I go Kilvio Varis instead of Ryan Klesko? God. Was Phil Nevin on the team? Was Phil Nevin on the team?
I don't see. He may have been at some point. If there are angry Padres fans, maybe we'll get a tweet about it, but he's not on the baseball reference page. Notable Padres, you're forgetting Greg Vaughn, who was a member of the 98 Padres.
That was going to be my next answer.
Wally Joyner was your first baseman.
Okay.
And then a whole bunch of other people, but.
Phil Nevin showed up in 99 on the Padres.
This team won the pennant, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. They did. Apparently. Wow. You know, they only had two starting pitchers with an ERA plus above 100. Kevin Brown and Andy Ashby. Oh, Sterling Hitchcock was on this team. Huh. All right. I should have remembered Sterling Hitchcock. Oh, Matt Clement. My man. He pitched in four games. But, yeah.
So I'm looking at I just went to their page and I remembered this. Like, they were a good team. Like, they won 98 games. And who did they beat the Braves in the NLCS?
Yeah. Yeah, would have been the Braves. Because right, the Braves beat the Cubs.
The Braves swept the Cubs. Yeah, yeah. That's right.
And they beat the Astros in the division series.
Yeah, man, I don't remember that.
That's a spoiler, too.
It is, and that leads us into probably the biggest topic of the week. It's the trade deadline for 2018 this week. It was also the trade deadline back in 1998. And the bombshell of a trade that went off, the Houston Astros acquiring Randy Johnson from the Mariners for three minor league players at the time. And so we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about that Johnson trade, which, as we mentioned, the Cubs and Astros were battling in the NL Central. This really did put Houston over the top, especially with how Johnson pitched the rest of that season. Players that Seattle got in return were Freddy Garcia, Carlos Guillen, and a player to be named later that turned into John Halama. Guys, initial thoughts on, I actually went to Twitter and asked some Mariners fans, the ones that could remember what life was like for Mariners fans during this. Patrick Dubuque, friend of the pod, responded with, "The year leading up to the Johnson trade was far more scarring than the trade itself. The team treated him so badly, and he was incredibly bitter all season. It felt like the whole city of Seattle was stuck in an elevator with both of them." Thoughts on the Randy Johnson trade?
I didn't know.
Oh, my God. You didn't hear me laugh because I was on mute for a second. So, wow.
Apparently, just kind of revisiting some articles, the big issue is this. The Mariners had not extended Johnson beyond the 98 season yet. He basically got fed up enough with it that he told them, "I am testing free agency," and kind of forced the Mariners handing him a trade. It feels like, especially this Randy Johnson, 3 years removed from a Cy Young, had a second place Cy Young finish also in those 3 years. You just pay him whatever he wants, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, well, we also have hindsight, right? We also have hindsight of the fact that he goes to Arizona and wins four straight Cy Youngs, right? We don't.
Yeah, like at that time, we don't know he's going to be arguably the best left-handed starting pitcher of all time.
Yeah, and he's already 34, right? He's 34 and he's got a 4.33 earned run average. Like, I don't know. You know, I can't. I don't think at the time we knew what was coming. Like, we didn't know he was going to have like the best late 30s of anyone, you know.
And who
can predict the late 30s? You know,
a theme of this podcast might be players who overperformed in their late 30s, and we might get into some of the reasons why. But that's definitely true.
You know why, right?
I know nothing. That is surprising. Like, that had not clicked with me. He was 34 years old when this happened. Just how dominant he was from like 34 to 40.
But he, you know, I didn't get to watch him that often because he played on the West Coast for most of his career. And maybe this is going to be a really stupid comparison, but I always kind of remember him almost like I remember early days of Aroldis Chapman. Just being like, this guy is insane. I wouldn't want to be anywhere near the batter's box when he's pitching. Kind of how that whole scene played out with John Krug at the All-Star game, which, you know, was kind of for show. But that's exactly how I would have felt standing in a batter's box with him. He was terrifying. And maybe I was skewed because most of my relationship with him was formed in highlights because I wasn't watching their games and stuff. So, you know, I was just seeing him strike out all these guys. I remember he would throw at Kenny Lofton a lot for some reason. And so he was incredibly intimidating. But yeah, and there was no one really like him else in the league. Like, I don't remember, you know, the Cardinals ever having to face a guy like that.
Yeah, this was easily, as we're thinking about 98 baseball memories, that Mariners team was one of the, if not the coolest team to follow as a kid, with Griffey and Edgar and Buehner, and they had A-Rod was coming on as a young player, and it seemed like, now, Johnson eventually leaves, Griffey leaves a year later, it's hard to cry for them because 3 years later they're winning 116 games or whatever, but it seemed like the start of something that just kind of fell apart before it fully realized what it could be.
In a way, yeah.
Not only that.
No, okay, I was going to say, like, in a way, yeah. And in a way, yeah. But they also won 116 games after they lost everybody. You know? Like, I know that that was the last hurrah, and they haven't been to the playoffs since. So maybe it was, like, a bunch of fluky things coming together and working out. But, you know, it's almost like I think of the unrealized thing as being like the aftermath of the 01 Mariners rather than the destruction of the 97 Mariners, you know?
I was going to say, and this is kind of just a commentary on baseball in 1998 in general, but you said, you know, that was a great team to follow. Like, I followed teams out of my market back then, like through SportsCenter.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what it was different then. I couldn't watch one of their games if I wanted to, like I can now. You know, so you had to watch, like, you know, that was back when SportsCenter was worth watching. So you'd get up and you would see all the baseball highlights. And that was that was my relationship with teams like the Mariners or any other team that was out of market, especially the West Coast teams.
Yeah, and definitely. And I actually did care about the ESPN games in those days. Like, I actually would.
Oh, yeah, cool. Absolutely.
I actually would, you know, I would tune in when the Astros were on ESPN or when the Yankees were on ESPN because they were incredible that year, you know? So it was like, that was kind of the last hurrah of the national games being a thing.
Somebody on Twitter also mentioned that Johnson was, he had been complaining about his lower back that season. It's really kind of startling to see. So 98 with Seattle, he goes 9-10 with a 4.33 ERA and 23 starts, hits Houston. And this really was the difference between the Astros and the Cubs in that NL Central race. Goes 10-1 and 11 starts, a 1.28 ERA, strikes out 12.4 hitters per nine, and just absolutely dominated and changed that entire NL Central race basically by himself. Obviously, Houston was a good team, but it was a huge edge to pick him up at this point.
So ridiculous. So ridiculous.
Do you think that's also says something to the fact that the American League was just so much better than the National League back then? I mean, maybe this is just a very small sample to that, but this was the prime time of the American League just whooping the National League. Whether if you want to use something stupid like the All-Star game, but more so like Interleague and World Series, like especially this one where it just looked like the American League with teams like the Yankees just had stuff that the National League could not match. I guess the Braves not.
Yeah, so this is like Yankee Dynasty era, right? And right. I think the Marlins won the year before, and then other than that, it's a bunch of Yankees.
Well, I would see from 96 until, yeah, well, I mean, this is stupid because it was all the Yankees, but I was like, well, from 96 until 2000, the American League won, what? Four out of five, but it was also the Yankees won 4 out of 5. So
yeah, this made me flip over to this Houston team, which I mean, there's most people remember the offense from that Houston team with Bagwell and Biggio and Alou and Derek Bell, Carl Everett. They all rounded out the outfield of that team. But looking at the pitching staff, they already had a pitching staff that had three regular starters with ERA pluses over 100: Shane Reynolds, Jose Lima, Mike Hampton before Mike Hampton fell apart. So, I mean, this was, you know, Billy Wagner closing. This, it's hard to believe. I know one team has to win it, but this team didn't get out of the National League this year.
So, Randy Johnson lost two games to the Padres in the 98 National League Division Series. What would you guess Randy Johnson's ERA was in that series?
I'm going to say he gave up like a one run each game or something. So, I'm going to say it was like, I'll say 1.50.
1.7?
1.93.
And he lost both of those starts.
14 innings, 3 earned runs. That's the Padres. Actually, you know, three of the Padres Astros games were one run games. So it was a pretty close series.
I don't know if you guys would know this, but any idea if there was ever talk of Houston re-signing him? Was how big of a arms race was this? Obviously, he ended up.
I actually don't remember. It's almost like I woke up one day and he was a Diamondback. Because I guess this was before the years of like perpetual rumor sharing. You know,
was he still? I don't remember how good he was with the Yankees. He was still decent, right? Or was he not?
He was good. He was good. Like I have his page up here.
I just remember him being like just perpetually angry.
Yeah, he had one good year. 3.79 ERA, 1.12 ERA plus. And then his next the next year he had a 5. But this does bring up the Diamondbacks, and they were an interesting team to go after him because they were an expansion team in 98. So this would have been their second season where they're going and spending big money on the top starting pitcher on the market.
Yeah, and I was reminded of this when the Las Vegas hockey team in their first year of existence went to the Stanley Cup final, that the Diamondbacks in their second year went to the playoffs. And that seems, you know, I say this as someone who doesn't know hockey very well, but that seems way more possible in hockey than a sport like baseball.
I guess the interesting thing about like the Diamondbacks and the Devil Rays at that time is that the Rays always seemed to me like the team that was gunning to compete from the get-go, signing all these players to to what became ill-advised contracts, you know? And then it's actually the Diamondbacks who kind of sat back a year, assessed what they had, and then, you know, signed Randy Johnson. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm looking at the 99 Diamondbacks, and like, you know, they're not a young team, right? And they,
I need to look them up.
They're,
what, Schilling does?
No, Schilling doesn't show up until they won the World Series. So that was 01.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah, like this is an old team. It's not like they sat back for a year and like let some young dudes develop and then really took over, you know? it's not like the Rays, or it kind of looks like the Rays, but they did it better. Cuz the 99 Rays, they're probably about the same age, if not a little younger.
Oh my gosh, Randy Johnson pitched 271 innings that season. Right?
You know, Brandon, speaking of the expansion teams.
Hold on, I'm eating. let me finish crunching this chip.
We can let the listeners know we're family. We're having some technical difficulties. It's fine. I was really hoping that segue would work, but
what I was really kind of stuck on for a minute was that Randy Johnson ended up going to the Diamondbacks, and they finished this season 65 and 97, and they were one of the two expansion teams along with the Devil Rays. And the Diamondbacks really turned it around, and they ended up winning the division the next year, in part because they got Randy Johnson. But heading into the 98 season, it was the Rays who went and made all sorts of like big free agent signings to, you know, to make a splash. And
it's a little jarring seeing Wade Boggs in a Tampa Bay Devil Rays uniform.
Yeah. And they signed two of the guys from the White Sox white flag trade, Wilson Alvarez and Roberto Hernandez, which is what made them get my attention at the beginning of the season. So like the Diamondbacks were the team that turned it around really fast, and the Rays, like, it took them another 10 years before they were anything.
This did lead me into, I had this really fun game I wanted to play that everybody's been looking forward to, called Can You Name One Player from the 1997 MLB Expansion Draft?
Oh.
Just one player.
Miguel Cairo.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a Cubs pick, I think.
He was the 8th pick of the expansion draft.
This game is not for me. Hold on.
I'll rip through the top 10 real quick. Tony Saunders was your number one pick.
Ah, Tony Saunders. Poor guy.
Followed by Brian Anderson, Jeff Supan, Quentin McCracken, Gabe Alvarez, Bobby Abreu, Jorge.
Oh, Bobby Abreu, who was promptly traded. Like, the Rays drafted him to trade him, right?
Oh, that could have been something. Jorge Fabregas, Miguel Cairo, Kareem Garcia, Rich Butler. There's your top 10. Bobby Abreu.
Yeah, I would not have said one of those names.
Hold on, I'm pulling this up because I'm interested in this. Dimitri Young went number 16 to Tampa. Tony Bautista, Randy Wynn, Damian Miller. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 All-Stars from the expansion draft.
Dimitri Young is the only Cardinals top five draft pick of my lifetime.
Wow. Bobby Abreu was drafted by the Rays, traded the same day to the Philadelphia Phillies for Kevin Stocker.
Ouch. Ouch indeed. Yeah, that's going to go down as not one of their good ones. Let's see. Then, oh wow. Wow. They also traded Dimitri Young to the Cincinnati Reds. Eric, do you know for who?
I do not.
It's Mike Kelly.
Okay. Ouch.
So that's really interesting, cuz the Rays drafted two players who were pretty young at the time and who ended up being all-stars, and like that set them back, you know, at least 6 wins. Now here's the thing. Now what's 6 wins, right? What's 6 wins when you're already in fifth place? Also, here's a question. How many games back were the Rays in 1998?
How
long? By the end of the year?
By the end of the season. How far back? How many games behind?
But the AL East. So the Yankees won 114. I'm going to guess the Rays. I'm going to say 49 games.
45.
They're 51 games behind. 51 games. Oh, here's the thing. The Blue Jays at 88-74 were 26 behind. They finished in third place. They were farther away from first place at the end of the season than the Detroit Tigers. Tigers finished 65-97, finished 24 games back. The Blue Jays, 88-74, were 26 games back.
When the Mariners won 116 games in 2001, the Rangers only finished 43 back. So it was worse than that.
that's Alex Rodriguez's Texas Rangers.
Oh, I don't remember. I distinctly remember the Rockies and the Marlins coming into the league. I don't know if it was just because I was in a different place in my life. I don't remember being super psyched for the Rays and the Diamondbacks.
No, I feel 100% the same way. I think it's two things. One, when the Marlins and Rockies came in, there had not been a new baseball team in our lifetime. You know, they were the first expansion teams that we had seen. So that was like really, really cool. And they had cool uniforms, in my opinion. I thought they were both pretty cool franchises. These two the excitement was not, at least for me, was not there because of what I just said with that. But also, like, I don't know, man. Like, I didn't really love either name. I hated the Diamondbacks uniforms. Yeah, I'm with you. I wasn't really feeling these teams either, Eric.
You know, within 2 years, the Diamondbacks were the little league team that I played on. So I caught on to the Diamondbacks pretty quick. I liked the Devil Rays name and logo a lot. Their stadium still looked weird to me even back then. Very not modern. even though it was, by that point, it had already been open for like a decade, right? So it was already out of date, I guess.
All right, looking at this, the Rays, 1998 Rays, had one starter with an OPS plus over 100. Can you name that starter?
I
Fred McGriff, right?
Fred McGriff, that's it, yep. 34-year-old Fred McGriff.
And then McGriff, when McGriff went to the Cubs, he went from the Rays, right, to the Cubs, right?
Yeah, he went from the Rays to the Cubs, yeah. He had a 111 OPS plus.
Oh, 19. Kevin Stocker of the Bobby Abreu trade fame racked up a 54 OPS plus the season after being traded for Bobby Abreu.
Oh my goodness.
So
Oh my goodness. Hey, what about what's his name? That guy they got for Dimitri Young.
starting
Mike
field,
Kelly. Mike Kelly.
He would go on to hit 240, 295, 401 that season.
Oh, 401, huh? In a high power era.
This is not a great lineup.
You know, I've read several things about 1998 this season, just because it is a 20-year anniversary. And, you know, the popular refrain is that it saved baseball, the home run chase saved baseball. And that's probably a little hyperbole, but there's some truth there in terms of just how big that was for the ratings and stuff like that. But I definitely read one take that said, I don't remember the exact words, I don't remember who wrote it, but it basically was coming out from the angle of it saved our country because it was also the same summer as the Lewinsky scandal. And it was basically saying like the country would have like ate itself alive because of how like polarizing things were becoming. But luckily we could all latch on to the home runs that were being hit by McGuire and Sammy Sosa to, I don't know, save ourselves from each other and, you know, find something that we can all agree on is good and pure and whatnot. And I don't know.
Alex, was it a weird season for you, Alex, having so many people like the Cardinals that season?
This was weird. This was a different time that, you know. I think that was a time when you didn't really have any sort of idea what the rest of the country thought of your baseball team, or at least not as well as you do now. And however well we do now, you know, who knows? Because Twitter is like its own kind of little bubble that we think reflects reality when – who knows? So to answer your question, Eric, yeah, it was a fun summer. It was a very good summer. I don't remember thinking like, oh, this is great. Everyone loves the Cardinals. But I do remember thinking that it's probably the only time in my life since I've followed this team, long time now, where I didn't really care about the standings. Like, you know, you're seeing the Cardinals now like toil away near 500 and the fans are furious. That's basically what they were in 1998. And granted, it wasn't coming off, you know, a huge period of success. So the fans by then were kind of used to not going to playoffs, but fans were way more invested in the home run chase, at least from my perspective, than they were the standings. And that was true for me as well. I don't know if that makes me a bad baseball fan, but I cared way more about looking at the box score to see if McGuire hit a home run than to see if they actually won a game. Like I could have gone to a baseball game, they could have lost 10-1. And if McGuire had hit a home run, you know, like 450 feet, I would have left that stadium 100% satisfied.
You know, it's weird. It's weird because I didn't enter my baseball fandom with this Cardinals hatred, I guess, because I didn't see them as a threat to my team. Like I was okay with Sosa not winning the home run race because the Cubs made the playoffs, and that was okay for me. Like, yeah, I wanted to see Sammy Sosa hit the big home runs, but he was hitting big home runs for a couple of years at that point. And I guess it was difficult for me to conceive like the huge jump from like 40 to 60, you know, that ended up happening, because I believe he broke his hand the year before and had to miss the last couple months of the season, or month and a half or something, and that basically meant that he wouldn't be able to hit 50 homers, right? So I guess the jump didn't quite hit me at the time, the jump to 62, even though like obviously it was monumental, but like for me it really was the Cubs being good that got me into everything in 1998.
Well, Brandon, that is a perfect tease for episode 2. because next week it's going to be an all Cubs episode. We're talking not much happened the following week during the 1998 season. So we're going to reach back into the beginnings of that season and look at two events. One, Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game. Two, Sammy Sosa's 20 home run month. Jared Willis, guest, is going to join us. Guys, anything you want to say as we wrap up episode one of this journey? We're shaking the rust off. We're remembering ourselves. Give us some time. But anything, any parting words as we go?
Alex, do you know how many seats the Democratic Party gained in the 1998 midterm elections?
Because I remember this specifically. My geology professor came into the classroom and said, I don't know if you all saw that last night, but the Democrats just kicked the shit out of the Republicans.
Really? That's what he said? Because it was five seats.
Five?
Five.
Huh. I thought it was way more than that. November 98.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't really know what he was talking about then.
Democrats gained five seats.
No, wait. Here's a question, though. Did that swing? Was that what happened?
No, it didn't swing it.
I remember this well. I swear to God, I do. Was there something else on a national stage in 98 that the Democrats would have beaten the Republicans?
Did they
gain the Senate?
Oh, it could have been the Senate.
Eric, I just realized Senate. I finished in the first episode. I don't want to get these.
This is good.
We're remembering 98.
We are. And I was going to tell people, we want you to remember 1998 with us. Here's how you do it. One, go to Facebook, like the Baseball Time Machine page on Facebook. Post articles from 98, memories, where we were wrong. Let's reminisce together about it. You can head over to Twitter. It was really hard to find a Twitter handle for Baseball Time Machine Podcast. So, BBallTMPod. BBallTMPod on Twitter. Hey, head over to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review the show. It really helps us out, especially these first few weeks. Send an email to BaseballTimeMachinePod@gmail.com. And again, join us next week as Jared Willis will be on for our Cubs-heavy 1998 episode. Guys, talk to you next time.